Today on Coffee Roasting Legends. San Franciscan roasters Bill Kennedy speaks with Matt King of Blue Ridge Bootleg Coffee.
Well, hello everybody. My name is Bill Kennedy, and I'm the owner of the San Franciscan Roaster Company, where we manufacture high-end artisanal specialty coffee roasters. And over the years, I've had a privilege of meeting and learning from countless inspiring individuals, roasters, business owners, coffee enthusiasts, etc. And we're doing this podcast to introduce you to some of these inspiring people. So here on the Coffee Roasting Legends podcast, I'll be sharing the stories, insights, and the passion for coffee. Today we're talking with Matt King, founder of Blue Ridge Bootleg Coffee. From his roots in the Blue Ridge Mountains to roasting on his San Franciscan SF-25, Matt shares how his journey as a musician and his love for the craft shapes every cup that he creates. And with that little introduction, Matt, I'm going to let you go. And I'd like you to just kind of start from the beginning and just speak freely and stream of consciousness. But tell us a little bit about your background and then what happened that made you decide you wanted to get into specialty coffee?
Okay. The first time I fired up a roaster up was with you on the other end and me not knowing what in the world was going on. Then I had a little 5-pounder. So roasting has been a midlife crisis that's turned into an incredible blessing and a tribute to overcoming everything. I was born in Western North Carolina in the mountains and grew up I was one snake bite shy of salvation. I was a little shortest, skinniest kid in a gold Norris house trailer with a family that was a house full of bluegrass music, gospel music, and coon hunters, and just it was Appalachian to the core. I didn't understand that Appalachia was a thing. It was just I was, right. Yeah. It was just that was where I was from, and I came from a family split up. I was spent most of my childhood alone, and at 17, mom and I weren't getting along too much, so she just told me I was on my own. And so I started a little rock band. That was my way of being rebellious against bluegrass and mountain music. And by the time I was in my early 20s, I thought I was washing cars. I worked as an apprentice at a jewelry store for 6 years, and then I would detail cars on the side. And I remember watching airplanes take off from the Asheville airport. And I just thought, this is my life for the next 20 or 30 years. And I had, I would watch these planes and go, what's going on in New York? What's going on in Nashville? And I just wanted to see if the world was flat. And I wanted to figure out how to see the world through the eyes of music. And I knew it was going to be that moment that I was going to decide whether I was going to push forward with $300 in my wallet and a busted Wagoneer, or just choose the comfort of someday having to say, what if? So I moved to Nashville, and I won't bore you with all the details. I convinced a lady to let me move into an apartment. I told her I'm going to get a record deal. And she says, I hear that from all of them. And I said, well, I'll have a job by Monday if you let me move in on Thursday. And she goes, I've heard that before too. So I came in with some rent money on Monday and I worked at a car auction. And long story short is I ended up signing with Atlantic Records 4 years later as a traditional country singer. And then I signed as a staff songwriter for Warner Chapel Music. And that was the next 15, 20 years of my life. The records were a great learning experience. I ended up ultimately in the life of an independent artist and an underground artist writing about Appalachian culture, producing records and writing for film and TV. And that was the journey, and it still is the journey, as a matter of fact. But move forward to the pandemic, and I had traveled and drank coffee in every city in this country. I was a coffee nerd, and I remember about my fourth year of writing as a staff songwriter, I went, why am I writing in cubicles to do this creative thing 5-6 days a week? So I found this little coffee shop on West End in Nashville. And lo and behold, there was a roaster in there. And I thought, there's other musicians that hang out here too. That's kind of cool. So, you know, I had learned early on that booze and I didn't get along. So that became my cheers. And within months, I was back behind the counter trying to make terrible latte art, but I just had a place to go to write songs and to hang my hat. But I just loved it. I loved the whole process. And during the pandemic, after all those years of traveling and drinking coffee, some dear friends of ours sent me 50 pounds of green coffee. Strangely, it was Monsoon Malabar, which is what he roasted in that little shop in Nashville.
Okay. All right.
And so I would walk by it, going into the studio every day, and I just thought, I ought to do something with this stuff. And I got out an industrial heat gun and a colander from the kitchen.
Okay.
And I just remember going out on the back porch, and I started. And then I needed to cool the beans down, so I rinsed them with water, like you do. And I walked up and said, Heidi, I think I've roasted some good coffee. And she's very supportive that way. So then I started studying and reading about it. And I ran into a guy named Mike Arnold, who owns Raphael's Roastery in Coffee County, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And I said, well, maybe I can make some of my coffee and sell it as merchandise. So I met with Mike, and it's just a great guy. I walked in, and there was 225 sitting there in his little 5-pounder. And I was just fascinated as a kid in candy store. And so he was really kind. Not only did he take time to white label some stuff for me, but he taught me some things. And it just snowballed. So I just started going to the YouTube University and reading and studying and watching everything I could. The coffee community just fascinates me. How many people like myself and just kind of fell into it. And so we were getting kind of stir crazy at the house. And I thought, well, this pandemic's never going to end, and people are going to lie to me. They're my fans. They're going to tell me they like the coffee. So I'm not getting any real world feedback. And so we went to North Carolina to play a little private gig at a castle. And my last name's King, so I had these little coffee bags. In fact, I've got one right here. And it said King Coffee and had a little skull on it.
All right.
And so I thought, I'll take some of that coffee. I mean, it was like 100 people, 50 people. And maybe they'll give me some good feedback. So there's no egoic attachment to coffee. There's no agenda. My gig's been music for 25 years, and I was just grateful to do something different. So here we are in the mountains. I do this gig and met some people that hosted the show, and we were having coffee the next day in downtown Silva, North Carolina. And the show was just really great. It was nice to be away from the city for once. And Heidi and I we had a great time. And I don't know what happened, but it was like, hey, you know, that place you've got to stay in, that's great, but you got those little dried up packets of silver coffee in the foil bags, and that's kind of high end. I mean, I'm not paying for it, but you want to open a coffee shop or roastery? And he said, yeah. That's how the business got started.
So yeah, let me stop you right there, because I've been tracking your story, and
I'm all over the place right now.
Well, no. It's interesting, because a couple of key points. One, you decided, you had a natural love for coffee. That was important to you. And so you kind of drifted toward coffee things, right? And you ended up in the little coffee house. What was that, the name of that little coffee house in Nashville? And are they still there?
No, they closed, and I almost bought it back at the time. I was going to actually take it over. And I went through a really dark period of my life that I wanted to, I was trying to keep it out of here just so I didn't want to labor on. But I think what I'm doing is it's convoluted. If you want to direct me, I can put something.
Well, no, that's fine. I tell you what, life circumstances help direct our paths. don't they?
Yes, they do.
And but the point is, you drifted toward coffee, and then I think you just pretty much just started making your own opportunities, putting yourself into situations where at least opportunities can present your you know present themselves. You found Mike Arnold at San Rafael's Roastery, and he's still going strong and still roasting on 225 pounders. You know, doing a great business, but you sought out a mentorship. And I wanted, that was an important point I wanted to make.
Yeah.
That you did seek out a mentorship and that, right, exactly. We'll get to the other one in a bit, won't we?
Yes, we will.
Because I know who you're talking about. And, but that sort of thing is so important. It's like in any artist realm. You do seek out people, you know, even in music. I know you seek out people who have something that you want and you ask. And you let people be generous. You allow an opportunity to present itself, in other words.
Absolutely.
And then you saw an opportunity and you asked the question. You didn't hold your tongue.
Nope.
And I think that's important, especially as you're stepping into an entrepreneurial realm. That you do have to put yourself out there. You gotta, you know, as a musician standing in front of the stage in the first time, and you don't know what your audience is going to be like. You know, that risk, but you go past that fear of failure.
I'd love to speak to that, Bill. I'd like to back up a little and speak to that. That's a really good point. When you're ready.
Go for it.
Well, so loving coffee and all that, I had, you know, I didn't have right models to model my life after. There was a choir director and a scout master and an uncle that made jewelry. I'd always liked craft using my hands and things, but I didn't really have any life skills. So I sought people out early on. I knew one man in Nashville that worked for George Jones for somebody years and years ago. And I had one appointment a week with him, and he would write songs with me. And I did my job, and I prepared every day. And I would listen to every bluegrass song, every country song. I didn't want to be caught off guard. If he said, well, sing me, you know, a Cash song. I just wanted to be as prepared as I could because I was terrified. And what I was learning to do was I was learning to do hard things, because I couldn't lead with anything that would be bluffing, because I was in a big music city. And what I learned was to surround myself and write up. So when I had an opportunity to write, I always wanted to write with somebody that was already successful, already had a career path. I mean, it's just literally mentorship was everything to me. And, you know, it's like Ray Wiley Hubbard is like my musical mentor. He's like my dad still. And he'd always say, you know, you're going to show up, you're going to kick the door to your past behind you and let it just, if you don't show up for this opportunity, you never know what might be coming this way. So I've learned through music to take and make the most of every one. And I don't know what the outcome's going to be. Me and the guy next to me might be working the same, just as hard. And one of us might go and become like whatever. But the process of learning how to work and learning how to complete something was everything for me. So in music, I put myself in awkward positions with people that just, you know, I didn't even know what to say. And that's was my lessons. And I fell into the life of a singer. And all I was trying to do was write songs and maybe get to sing. But back then we were recording to tape and you had to be really fast behind a microphone. So Keith Whitley was my hero, and he was gone. And so they found out, here's this kid from North Carolina that can sing, and he's real fast on a mic. And they were trying to get traditional country songs cut. So I was just, it was just a, I was awkward in every way. And then the next thing I knew, 4 years later, they put me in front of like, I don't know, 40,000 people with no band. And you can see all those people. It's the one guy in the audience going, just like, you zero in on that guy.
You know it's that way in coffee too, right? There's always the one guy.
Always.
There's a lot of duality there between being an artist musician and being an artist coffee roaster too. you have your different crowds too. But you know, to get straight to the point, you walked forward, you stepped into that realm, and you chose not to let, good grief. I'm sorry. It is funny that you cooled your coffee beans by rinsing water on them. Now, some of the really big roasteries, I mean, some of those big old ProBots, they have water misters inside of them
Right.
to help with the cool down process. So I guess you weren't that far off. But everybody's got a kind of an embarrassing starting point.
Oh.
And it's okay. It's okay. Now let's move forward now. You've decided, okay, I'm gonna make we got to the King Coffee, and you wanted to make a living, or at least a side hustle
Yeah.
doing coffee. So let's go there and where those
Sure.
steps were.
So when I put it out there, hey, let's start a coffee roastery, there was about a 300 square foot stone cottage on the side of a mountain. You got to remember, I've been on the road and in Tennessee or New York for all these years, or Texas, wherever, but home base was in a city. And I had this view of the mountains that was so panoramic, and all it was a Spartan 300 square foot stone cottage with no running water and no heat.
That's awesome.
And I said, I'll take it. It was free rent, and I needed help. I got this roaster in there and this little 5 pounder. And for me, at my age, after that many years doing one job, I had no egoic attachment to it, because I had learned in music, if I'm playing on whatever stage, to whatever degree, I'm a new guy in every city I play in, and I have
Right.
been for years. So I couldn't compare my coffee roasting with the next person that's killing it, or I had to compete with myself, and I know how I can deceive myself to try to do something. Well, coffee is a, for me, was something that's a personal challenge. I want to see if I can actually make that bean taste like it smells.
Okay.
So that's what happened. And I was trying to find out who teachers were that could teach me on this San Franciscan roaster. And I got a referral of this guy named Don Cox up in Boone, the Bald Guy Roastery. So, I just called and said, hey, I'm Matt King. I need help figuring out how to use this thing. So he said, this is how much it'll cost. I'll come to you. So he came to the mountain, and home is in Nashville, so I'm spending a lot of time here. And but I'm in hog heaven. It's just everything's different about what I'm doing. And Don and I tried to fire this little machine up, and lo and behold, there was some things janked up with it. So we called you, and you were so gracious to take time to help us get it fired up that night. And I did not stop once we fired it up. I'd call Don and say, Don, I'm roasting this much coffee, and I think I need to do this. And he says, you're not even working yet. And those of you who know Don, and I thought, I'm going to kill myself. I'm doing 15 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's the process of, and so learning along the way, I learned to call everybody I can, because I'm a new guy and I'm just trying to sell some coffee, but my motivation was not financial. It's still an incredible labor of love. And I'm still, balancing music. My wife tours. I'm just trying to figure out how to do it. So that's kind of been the process, Bill. And I guess 2.5, 3 years I roasted on that 5 pounder till I was doing 6 pounder. I'm sorry. I guess I was doing 1500 pounds a month maybe on it. And we were also, I built a little cafe at another resort, so I was learning more about the coffee business. But that's I'm not afraid to ask anybody for help. And what I'm finding is there's a whole lot of amazing, gracious people in this industry. And it's the more successful, the more gracious they are.
Yeah, that's one thing I really enjoy about specialty coffee is, well, one, the transparency, but two, the kind of the genuine altruism that's out there that people have toward each other. And I really, really enjoy that. So, okay, you're doing 1500 pounds a month, 6 pounds at a time on that little roaster. At some point, you know, time being a limited thing that we all have. You made a transition to get into a bigger roaster, and it kind of corresponded with your new coffee house, which I got to say, you have one of the coolest coffee houses. I mean, you have that typical, incredibly cool coffee house vibe there in Old Town. Well, sorry, tell me the city you're in right now.
Silva, North Carolina.
Yeah, and it's like, oh my gosh, the brick, the old wood, all the bootleg stuff. I mean, your bootleg history. I mean, it's. Yeah. But yeah, so how did that look? Getting into the bigger roaster, and how's that working for you?
Well, it's the way the opportunity just developed. What I was doing was I was white labeling for a couple of businesses, and I was supplying one grocery store to a little coffee house in downtown Silva. And it was the oldest building here. So it's like a 110-year-old building. It's just gorgeous alone. And the basement was full of just 80 years worth of trash, basically. So there was this underutilized area.
Yeah.
And so that was enough to keep me busy, but my hands were on every single batch, every single bag. And, I mean, I wear a brace because I blew out my thumb joint scooping coffee beans and realizing I was using the wrong scooper. And the opportunity came as far as branding it. My grandfather and my great-grandfather were both bootleggers, but they were also just – I come from a long line of orphans on both sides of my family. So there were people who had, you know, my grandfather, honestly, they were shooting or fighting in the house, and he grabbed a pair of woman's – shoes out of the trash can outside and knocked the heels off of them and took off and commenced to go somewhere to live and raised himself and learned a trade, learned how to become a plasterer without doing math. I just come from a long line of not survivors, but people who've learned to thrive through overcoming their own whatever shortcomings. And so the limitation for me was I didn't really feel limited. I just wanted to be able to stay right sized as a roaster and not bite off more than I can back up. So I kept my selections, and I still keep my selections. They're very limited. I don't have lots and lots of coffees. And the lady that owns this building said, "Hey, Matt, we're going to go do something else. Would you want to rent the building?" And I was like, "Sign me up." So we spent about 6 months gutting the place. We started with the water. We started with the hole. We did the whole water line. We did a great halo system. And then we started with the electricity. I mean, there was screw-in fuses in the walls. And I was by myself a whole lot during that time. And I had a great group of men that were helping me. And then we just did as much as we could. And we opened this basement up. And what we found, like, this is the stone wall. I'm down in the most nether corner of the building.
Okay.
And we found antiques. We found miracle ointment from 1920 that had never been opened, you know.
Oh, so, really? Okay.
So that's it. That's how I got in this building. And I got to kind of put a spin on it. I wanted to make Blue Ridge Bootleg a musical coffee business that supported musicians, which is where we're headed right now. And the idea was, how can I get music there? Well, I had to get the coffee started first. I had to get established somewhat. So this gave us a downtown community kind of vibe. And the next thing I wanted to do was, I knew from my years on the road, there's a lot of people, with all due respect, that love great coffee, but they didn't want to have to speak the language. They weren't coffee snobs.
Sure, yeah.
They didn't want to know all about it. They just wanted a great cup of coffee. Yep. And all they knew was they've got swill or chicory or whatever they're used to, or they have something that costs a ton of money and nobody explaining it to them. And I thought, that's who I'm going to go. I want to get those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I want those people to be the ones that I can, we can speak the language as far down the rabbit hole as you want to go. Guys at work for me, not mine, but that's what we did. And that's where we're headed with it. That's what Blue Ridge Bootleg is here in Silva. And so it is a music place, but more importantly, it is a testament to overcoming my own limitations. And it's a tribute just to my family. I hopefully can be a legacy. I don't have kids. Always wanted them. So I got a great group of people around me.
Well, that's awesome. You know, there's what I'm hearing is this, the adversity of your of your ancestors and the adversity that you have had has played a great role in giving you the strength to take the next steps. And we're human. We are creatures of comfort, right? So we tend to shun adversity, yet adversity finds us. And so what I hear all the time, though, is the people who say, yeah, I'm not a victim. I'm a champion. And I'm going to walk through this, and I'm going to conquer this adversity and put it behind me. And I'll be stronger for the next adversity, because that's what we do, is right, is we go from sometimes adversity to adversity. But anyway, moving ahead, no, it sounds like you've got a great thing going there, Matt. I know you have so much, such an incredible future in front of you. You know, you'll be growing in capacity. You have an amazing brand, and people love the story. You have an amazing story. And it's not going to happen overnight. But it has been happening to you. And how many years between that, when you walked into that coffee house in Nashville, to today? 25 years. Okay.
25 years of overnight building a business, I guess. But it's been 5 years of actually being mindful and present for this idea.
Right.
Feel more like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where he's in the living room or kitchen with that big pile of mud. And he's like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I need to be doing this. That's this journey for me. I'm like, I got to do something with this thing.
No, that's awesome. Well, listen, we're going to wrap it up here, but I want to thank you for sharing what you had to share. I hope people listening will get some encouragement. And, you know, and again, you started as a musician. You still are an accomplished musician. And now you're an accomplished specialty coffee roaster.
I appreciate you saying it. Thank you, Bill.
Like I said, you have one of the most amazing. Hey, what's your Instagram? Is it at bootleg?
It's at Blue Ridge Bootleg Coffee.
Okay.
On Instagram, and that's probably that's where we're most active right now.
Yeah, I'd encourage people, go to Instagram, look at Blue Ridge Bootleg Coffee, and get a sense of your create. You can tell you're an artist there. You can tell you're an artist because your space is absolutely beautiful. And again, well, thank you for joining us. Hey, do you have any last words you want to share with everybody about, you know, who's thinking about taking their next steps?
Well, I can say this, and it's almost surreal to have someone ask me that. There's no arrival. I'm just in the middle of the stream swimming. I would say managing expectations. For me, on the days that I, and this is not my quote, but when I keep my gratitude higher than my expectations, those are really good days in the coffee industry. And doing my personal best, because I think in this industry, you have to learn to ask. And if you don't, when you post something, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to tell. So most important thing for anyone thinking about taking a leap into this business is, first of all, ask yourself, do I enjoy it? And do I lose track of time when I'm doing it? Does it make a job? And second is, seek out someone that you can trust that has whether it's a business model or a lifestyle, that you go, man, I could do that. And then if you got those two components, you got some rails on your bumper car.
That's awesome. Well, thanks, Matt. Okay, so we've been speaking with Matt King, owner, proprietor of Blue Ridge Bootleg Coffee Roasters and in Silva, North Carolina. And I just want to thank you again, Matt, for being with us, and wishing you the very best. And we really hope we can continue walking with you as you continue growing.
Thank you. It's an honor to work with you, Bill. Seriously, we love your company and what you stand for.
Well, thank you. All right, Matt, you have a good day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.
Okay, bye.